This is the Wheeler Centre podcast.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Sophie Black, and welcome to the Wheeler Centre on this freezing, freezing cold night. I'm so impressed that you've all shown up. Welcome to tonight's discussion about writing as a woman online. We're going to pretty much cover off on everything. We've only got 45 minutes, so let's see if we can squeeze it all in. But we want to examine social media's potential to elevate and highlight conversations by, about, and for women. And then we want to look at the flip side of that. The very dark side, in fact. The very real and relentless fact of online harassment. Do those two things always go hand in hand? Why, and do they have to? We've got four very smart, vocal, and fierce women to discuss all things hashtag writing while female. But first, I'd like to acknowledge that we're meeting today on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and to the elders of all other communities. Jane Gilmore, Rebecca Shaw, Yasmin Abdul-Mageed, and Lucy Valentine are writers who put their words, beliefs, and opinions on social media with the intention of connecting, challenging others, and pursuing change. Jane Gilmore is a freelance journalist with a strong focus on data journalism and male violence. She was the founding editor of the King's Tribune and now has a weekly column for the Sydney Morning Herald. She's been published by The Guardian, Meanjin, The Age, The Saturday Paper, news.com.au and Junkie, among many others. Rebecca Shaw is a writer, podcaster and creator of the parody Twitter account No to Feminism, which has been developed into an illustrated book with Affirm Press. She's a contributing editor for Kill Your Darlings Journal and has written for Junkie, The Guardian, Daily Life and SBS Comedy. Lucy Valentine is a Melbourne-based comedy writer and enemy of the state. She writes for Cracked, which is a very recent move, and co-hosts the Boonta Vista Socialist Club podcast. I'm going to slow down now. I've had too much coffee. Yasmin Abdul-Mageed is a mechanical engineer, social advocate, writer, and media commentator. Yasmin has recently founded an organisation called Mumtaza, dedicated to the representation of women of colour. Please put your hands together for all four ladies. Okay, so before we kick off, there's been a slight change of plans. We had three chairs along here. We now have four chairs along here. Yasmin, you were originally on the bill for tonight and you pulled out. Yes. Do you want to tell us why?
So, I don't know if anyone noticed that I posted anything on Anzac Day, but it happened. And I suppose the result of that meant, well, I guess what everyone saw all across news in Australia. And it also meant that any event that I started to do, journalists started to sneak into and report on. From school student events where I would talk in... Like, when you talk to school kids, you simplify concepts, right? Because they're children. And those sorts of things are being reported, being misconstrued and so on. And essentially, that in association with the fact that everybody who gave me advice, like, I sought advice from all sorts of people, from crisis managers to people that were in PR and all sorts of things. And everyone was like, make yourself a small target. Don't say anything. Just be quiet. It'll all blow over really soon. They can't go on forever. Mm. Evidently, everyone was wrong. but my strategy was essentially to pull out of everything, to be a small target, to not talk about what was going on, because if I talked about it, I would fuel the fire. The philosophy was, what could I possibly say that would make things better? Nothing, because of the way things work, apparently. And so I was like, I'm going to pull out of everything.
What changed your mind? What brought you here tonight?
So Jane texted me, messaged me and was like, hey, but the reality is being a small target didn't work, right? Like the reality is me saying nothing actually just left a vacuum for people to fill with their own interpretations, their own vitriol. And I just got back from overseas. So I was overseas for a few weeks. And I had to explain to people why Australia hated me so much. And it just gave me this sense of perspective. People were like, oh, was it just because of that? And I was like, well, no, what you don't understand is it's a very sensitive topic and blah, 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 blah. But they were like, isn't there anything else going on in Australia? And I was like, I don't know. I've stopped reading the news. And so, like, honestly...
There wasn't anything else in the news.
Like, honestly, I've just kind of been like, fuck it, right? Like... thank you. Like, what... If I am quiet, then they win. So, yeah, here I am.
And it is worth keeping in mind that it wasn't just the full force of social media that you have been up against. It's with the full support and page space of The Australian, for example.
It's like, it's so
weren't you
bizarre.
On the front cover of the Daily Telly?
I was on the... I've been on the front cover of, like, of more papers than I can count, actually. Mm. I kept count up to, like, 10. But yeah, a full front page of the Daily Telly. Ironically, they couldn't count.
I know.
It was like, anyway.
like they couldn't count to three.
And it was to be like I can handle. Like, you know, I knew how to handle dealing with trolls. I did not know how to handle dealing with the full force of the mainstream press, and the cabinet ministers and the government. Yeah. Like these are the people like. I'm getting phone calls from ministers, right, on the weekend being like, you should really not talk about this sort of stuff. I'm like, what is happening to my life? Mm-hmm. Like, I can barely feed myself at dinner, but this is this other world that doesn't make any sense. And you guys, it's social media. Like, yeah, so it was incomprehensible and way outside what I had ever experienced before. But if I don't, yeah, I think the reason I have decided to start talking about the stuff that's going on is because I think there is nothing else filling that vacuum and other people are writing my narrative. And something that's been really important to me for a long period of time is me writing my own narrative. Mm. And this is kind of me sort of standing up and saying, actually, I need to, you know, we need to talk about what's going on here. Otherwise, it'll go on unchecked.
Mm. Well... We really appreciate that you're here tonight and we're glad you changed your mind. I'm going to pull it back a bit and kind of widen it out, but I'm sure that your amazing case study will continue to come up throughout the night. Let's just talk about, you know, the hashtag for tonight is writing while female. So let's start with that, shall we? So I imagine that the four of you, like most ladies, wake up in the morning and the first thing that you do is, you know, apart from, you know, put on your face and tidy your hair and
definitely not
is to pick up your handheld devices and take a deep breath and say out loud, okay, right, it's time to start my day writing as a woman online. I imagine that's the first thing you think of when you get on the internet, right?
I've actually recorded that as my alarm, and so I say it to myself as I get up every morning.
Okay, so this is a question for all of you. To what degree does your gender consciously inform your interactions on social media?
I guess it depends who you're interacting with. So, obviously, Yasmin's experiences were... not always good. Mm. And I think we've probably all had them to a certain degree, although not like that. But mine have also been really positive. I wouldn't have the career that I have now without social media. Yeah. That it was the people that I met and the people who were sharing my work on social media that got me noticed. It was making contacts with editors and with other publications, I think has happened almost entirely on social media. Mm-hmm. So... while there's absolutely downsides, and I'm sure we'll get to those, mm-hmm. I've also made some amazing friendships. I started on social media and maintained some friendships too, where, you know, everybody's so busy and you maybe get to see somebody, you see them at every writer's festival or you see them once a year or something, but because you're in contact over social media and you're sharing your work and ideas, that friendship's a lot stronger than it would be if you only see them once every 12 months. So I think it's worth saying... well, yes, there's a downside, but also I have a career and friends because of social media, so I'm really okay with it.
Mm. Mine's actually because of Jane, who saw me ranting about something on Twitter and asked me to write something. That was the first thing I ever wrote. and sort of formed my entire career.
One of the things I'm most proud of.
So send all your hate mail to her. That's what I'm saying. But yeah, it's to do with what there's certain things, like if you then go to write an article, I think that will start coming more into your mind now, like who's going to read this, who's going to respond to it, what might it trigger. But Yasmin sort of overshadowed, because we only have to deal with, I've never had to deal with a government agency, so I feel weak now.
You are winning at this, Yasmin. Sorry. You are winning it, yes.
Yeah.
No, I think it's good to focus on the positives because, you know, it's overwhelmingly negative in terms of writing while female. It's kind of like a horror story when you put it that way. But, yeah, I think a lot of us have sort of made a lot of our contacts and sort of started our careers on social media.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a good aspect.
And from an editor's point of view too, I've been the editor of a couple of publications, it's a great way to find new voices. So as Beck was saying, that was where I found her. Amy Grave started writing with us. I found her on social media and she's awesome. She's out there.
Just heard a snort. I think she's in the audience.
But most of the writers that I was in my career as an editor, almost all of them, I found their work on social media and contacted them on social media. So it worked both ways.
And also the community is also very important, but also finding, like, the amount of education and things that have happened that have informed my writing have all happened from following other women, like women like Yasmin or trans women, queer women. Like, that's where you find these voices because they're not published in the mainstream enough. And so that, I think, has been, like, incredibly important, a positive in my career anyway.
Yeah, like, putting aside the fact that you can pay for promoted posts or something like that, it's massively democratic, right? In the sense that everybody's voice is on the same timeline and so you do get the opportunity to see other voices in ways that you usually wouldn't. And I mean, I was thinking about it earlier, like I find that I can go to almost any English-speaking country now and already have friends there from the writing world or from the political world because I follow their stuff on social media and because I've read their articles. And it makes you feel like that was the beauty of when the sort of internet was first kind of anyway, there's a word I'm thinking of. But like when people started using it in a big way, one of the most exciting parts of it was that you could create community in ways that didn't exist before. You could create community around interest groups and even the most niche, bizarre thing that you loved, right? Like you would find somebody else in the world who also loved it and also wanted to talk about it. And that is amazing. And like I think I also put Twitter in a different bucket to Facebook, for example. Like my Twitter friends are like... I bumped into someone in the UK a couple of weeks ago who I felt like I knew really well. And when we bumped into each other, we were like, oh my God, and we picked up from where our Twitter conversation left off, right? And so it felt like a real world in a very different way to, I think, what Facebook does. But, I mean, also, there are groups on Facebook. So there's like Binder for Australian writers, for example, Australian women writers, who, when all the Anzac stuff went down, fundraised money for me to take like a break, which is ridiculous. Like I didn't know the women that supported me, and it was just through the, you know, it felt you know, people talk about the difference between online community and offline community. It felt like community regardless of whether it was online or offline. It felt like I had people to support me, and I think, you know, regardless of all the stuff that can happen that's negative, it can also sort of hold you in a real way.
And it can also be like a direct, like with the stuff that happened with Clem and the Avid Reader in the last few days. I don't know if everyone's across that, but it's a bookstore in Brisbane that did a post about her new book, and then it was like a concerted troll MRA effort to bring down their rating because they need hobbies.
A few things they need.
I'm like, that's what, have you heard of, like, try knitting, like something.
Something constructive.
And sort of like the practical alternative was that thousands more in the writing community sort of went and left good reviews. So it was like that does, like the rating doesn't really matter, but it's that feeling of, oh, the when you're feeling sort of isolated and you're feeling under attack, it's sort of like, oh, people have my back. And like people who understand what it's like as well who are there.
And how much do we think, and we're accentuating the positives for now, but how much do you think feminism and the way we talk to and about women, how much has that been influenced and shaped
by the nature of online discussion and the internet in a positive way?
I think it's been shaped a lot mainly because this is the first time that women have had access to a public voice like this. I mean, we're still looking at 70% of newsrooms are men. And to get a public voice through the normal broadcasting channels, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
Whereas social media, you just jump over that and go, well, I don't need you. Mm. And if you've got something interesting enough to say, as all these women have, people listen and they share it and other people listen, and that you almost don't need to worry about the men who are getting in the way of women's voices.
Mm.
You just say your thing.
You just do it. Publish yourself.
Yeah. Well, that was how I started.
Mm.
I think that's how we all started, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I guess I'm interested then in you know, it's not so much a matter of getting up in the morning and thinking you know, I'm going to write as a woman. I guess now I'm interested in that idea of to what degree is the reaction that you get on social media and what's reflected back at you shaped by your gender? And, you know, there are different ways that you can explore this. For example, being a funny woman. So, Lucy and Beck, I'm looking at you here. So, how are you received, Lucy, I'll start with you, as a woman on social media writing satire?
In a positive way or a negative way?
Both.
Look, there are a lot of negatives. I would definitely say that, you know, since we have a lot of male colleagues that did our SBS comedy stuff with us, that the nature of the response that I would get, even when it was critical, would be of a different nature, and it would be more abusive, and it would be more personal, more aggressive, that sort of thing. But
so you could actually sit in the office and make a direct comparison.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, a lot of the time when we were sort of pitching ideas with each other, you just know that when one of the male writers writes the, you know, feminist sort of angled piece, that it's going to go down better. It's going to get less of a like abusive response.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, I think a lot of the attacks just immediately go personal. Like many feminist writers and all, like even when we're doing comedy, get, you're an ugly dyke. And meanwhile, not enough feminists are dykes, by the way. It's really disappointing to me. You'd be surprised. I wish. And, you know, I'm a fat woman, so I get that instantly. It's the first thing they go to. Like, I'm not aware of it. And it just doesn't happen to the male writers the same. Like, no one's like, ugly head, which a lot of them have.
Yeah, it's always... just kidding. That's a
joke. But yeah, it's just sort of a different... It's just a much more venomous response that you know that is coming. And even I had a thing with George Christensen, the politician.
The when you say society, you had a thing with
I didn't
him.
I had a... Do not spread that rumour, please. Where I wrote a pretty inoffensive article about him attending a Reclaim Australia rally and how I didn't think that was cool. And he went to my Facebook and, like, got a photo of me and put it on his page to be like, have at this, like, fat woman that you hate. And all the comments were like, she hasn't been laid, and, like, just really personal and sexual and, like something that the male writers would never get in a million years. Like,
I check with all the male writers and I have yet to find one who's been told he's not allowed to write because he's had too many sexual partners.
Wow. Yeah.
And I've checked with all the female writers and I've yet to find one that hasn't been called a fat slut on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, we don't write in a vacuum, right? And what online in particular does is it exaggerates and exacerbates and amplifies all the attitudes that are out there, right? Whether it's positive love for what you're doing or it's, you know, the fact that we live in a society that can't look past a woman's physical appearance and listen to what she's actually saying. And it's, you know, so I think it's not a reflection of the online world alone. It's more a reflection of the fact that the online world allows for us to maybe see what people would like to say if there was no retribution, right? And that's what we see.
Jane, what about you in terms of safe subjects or safe spaces? I mean, I found when I was editing Crikey that there are many subjects that I could write on that would never, ever
draw any reaction around the fact that I was female. And then there were certain subjects that if I wrote about them, that's, or hashtags that I would, you know, jump onto, that's when I would attract that. So have you found that there's a difference between, say, being the editor of King's Tribune or the editor of Women's Agenda in terms of the reaction that you get?
I think once the trolls identified me as a feminist, then anything I write, I deserve to be crushed and killed because I'm too much of a fat slut to write words. So anything I write about now is gets that reaction.
Right, yeah. Absolutely anything, whether it's a dry economics piece.
So I did a really, really boring piece on parliamentary expenses a while ago.
Wow.
It was really boring. And
selling yourself well.
No, I mean, it was awesome. You should totally go and read it. But it was the same reaction. It wasn't as strong as when I write about crime statistics, particularly about violence against women, but it was still pretty strong. But I have to say, of all the reactions that I've seen, and like everybody said, there's quite a community, so we all know each other, and people will always be going, well, not always, but every now and again somebody will say, look, this is something bad's happening, my social media is just overwhelmed and I really can't cope right now. And people will pitch in. And I've done it for a few people and I've watched it happen to a few people. I've seen Clems, who gets some horrific stuff, Van Badham, Celeste and Ruby, who get some really racist stuff, but I have never seen anything like what happened after the Anzac Day stuff, because I had to write about it and I was going through the Facebook comments. I thought I was unshockable. I really did. I had to stop because I felt sick. The rage was so visceral and it was so racist. And it was entirely about the fact that Yasmin is black and Muslim. And it was this right down atavistic visceral rage that she would dare to speak. How dare you? I've never seen anything like it, ever, in all the time I've been on the internet and all the stuff that I've received and anything I've seen that anyone else has received. I have never seen anything close to it. It was horrific.
Yasmin, you were saying earlier that it's hard to gauge... It's hard to gauge what is normal in terms of online abuse when you're not privy to the stuff that other people are on the receiving end of.
Yeah, I wrote this, I reflected on it in a piece in the Griffith Review recently where I sort of talked about the fact, the reality is that even though we are a community, the abuse is so personal. So I get it in my Twitter feed, I get it in my inbox, I get it on my Facebook page. I don't know, it's not like it's being yelled at me in a group of people so I can hear what is being yelled to other people. And so I just kind of assume that what is happening to me is happening to everyone else, or I assume that I'm just overreacting, right? Because everybody else gets this kind of abuse. So, like, Yasmin, why are you making such a big deal about it? And to kind of hear that that maybe it was a slightly different level is like it's quite validating, to be honest, because I spend my life for the last 6 months kind of just dealing with shit that I get in. Across any contactable form of media. Even people send me actual letters with hate mail, and I'm like, that's a lot of effort. Like, you have to go to the post office and buy a stamp. Like, I don't know who these people are. I mean, I'm almost flattered. but it's like to know almost that it is different makes me feel like a little bit more equipped to handle it, because I can say it gives me some sort of benchmark for the fact that this it allows me to say this is not okay, right? Because all of us kind of weirdly accept that there's an amount of hate that's going to come with this existing, right? And that's going to come with putting ourselves out there in any way. But to be able to say, oh, it's actually okay for me to be a little bit more upset about this, helps.
And also, I would say, because I'm white, so obviously it's not as bad on all levels, but also I think being the way that we write, I don't know about for Lucy, but compared to what I see people on my level get, like all the women I've mentioned, I think because I do write things in a more comedic way, it doesn't attract that level of vitriol. Like, I don't have to go out there every day and like slog out a serious article about stats, and that seems to be the stuff that attracts a lot of the hate. Whereas I think because I'm obviously a funny idiot, it doesn't need to be funny.
Bio,
you're a woman,
right?
Yeah. That's true. So it is like there's obviously very different levels that we attract.
The funny thing about that too is like, it's like, I just want to write things that take the piss as well, but I'm not allowed to anymore because, like, nobody understands Yasmin taking the piss. Like, that would be Yasmin slams something. And I wonder, Beck, do you think that you would be able to enter, like, would you be able to transition between the two, or is it kind of like once you start writing in one space, you can't really do the other?
I think there is some crossover because everything I've written, even if I write something that's about a serious issue, I sort of have traditionally made it funny. But it doesn't, if you're just trying to write straight satire, it's, even with the Note of Feminism account, which gets a lot of, it doesn't get a lot of trolling even when it was at its peak. For some reason, I think because lots of people don't understand that it's a joke. It still happens. It's been around for like over a year and it's been made into a book and people will still, like the example I use is one I got a few months ago that was, I don't need feminism. My husband isn't a monster because he wants to make me stay home. He's a monster because his dad is a werewolf. And I would get trolling to that as if it was a real claim that I was making. And I'm like,
there's got to be something satisfying about that for
it's
you.
Kind of, it's so also good. Funny because a lot of the people who attack it are on my side because... So they're saying, don't you want to be able to drive and get equal pay? And I'm like, it's a tweet about a werewolf. On the SBS comedy page and Backburner and stuff, it's just constantly people not understanding the joke. So it would definitely be... And people would deliberately pretend to not know that you're joking if you started trying to have a joke.
Are you finding that you're self-censoring?
Oh, I have an entire folder of tweets I have not sent.
That's amazing.
I actually have started to send them to friends because I'm like, I need to say this, but I know it will end up on a front page. This is something that I'm really struggling with at the moment. I haven't settled on anything. Because I'll have, you know, the advice is, Yasmin, you're now this public figure. Anything that you say and do will be used against you in the court of the world, right? Just everywhere. Mm-hmm. But people are like training me to speak in, you know, messaging and blah, blah, blah. And it just sounds so wanky, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be speaking in like canned messages about the things that I care about. The whole idea is that I hate that kind of language and I hate that. I want to be able to talk about issues in the way that I want to be able to. And so the struggle between knowing that the way that I talk is exposing me to risk versus wanting to reduce that risk, but also feeling then inauthentic and unable to actually communicate what I want to communicate. Mm. I just turned 26. When am I going to be able to say the kind of stuff that flippantly that I can say, if not now?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know.
And there's also the balance of like, what difference will that make anyway? Because with the MRAs or the trolls or whatever, like it literally doesn't matter what you say people who went on your Facebook and said racist comments aren't going to be like, oh, well, now I agree with Yasmin now that she said it on that way.
She changed my mind.
Yeah, like there's also that balance of how do I engage with these people? Because I know immediately you're not coming at me in good faith. Like you, doesn't matter what I say, what evidence I have, it's just, this is a waste of both of our times. You just want to waste my time.
What about you, Jane? I mean, have you ever, as a result of sustained abuse, self-centred or checked yourself at any time?
Self-censoring is not one of my greatest skills.
No, but have you ever paused? Have you, even in just weak moments?
There's only one thing that's ever really restricted me. Many, many years ago when my daughter was about 7 or 8, somebody trying to get a rise out of me in many ways, and I was just laughing because it was actually funny, discovered that I had a daughter and so they were threatening her. And that really got me quite upset. So from then on, I keep us completely separate on social media. Mm. I don't mention her name. Mm. I refer to her as teen daughter so that she's unfindable, because while I'm happy to be the target of those things, she's a teenage girl and she should not be the target of that stuff. So that's probably the only way that I self-censor. Apart from that, I get a very different reaction to Yasmin because I'm not young and I'm not black and I'm not Muslim and so I don't get them so angry. I get the, well, you're too old to speak, so shut up. There's about half an hour, I think, when you're 27, that you're allowed, and then that's it.
Stop. If you're 27 and beautiful and white, you're allowed
you get for half an hour, and then you're suddenly too old. So I just tend not to pay a great deal of attention to it. But again, I find it easy to ignore because the things that they're yelling at me about are just so stupid. I mean, they're so stupid, but, you know, the shut up fat slut thing, and I think, well, you don't know what I look like and you don't know anything about my sexual history and why do you care? And it just doesn't interest me. So I find it easy to ignore, but I'm in a very different space to Yasmin, whose abuse is a lot more personal and a lot more widespread. Mine is a lot easier to ignore.
What about Lucy, have you ever...
Self-censored?
Yeah.
I try not to, but I think when you're writing articles, especially when you're sort of... even just writing jokes on Twitter, anything that has any kind of feminist undertone, you know, is going to just... you're going to get abuse for it. And sometimes it's just more of a sense of, can I deal with this today? Like, do I want to deal with that? Is the joke worth it?
Mm-hmm. I've noticed Lucy gets a lot more, like, mansplaining than I do, which is not the same as Shirley. But it's just, you know, it's
why,
due to
why
a trying...
do we
I think they're trying
is?
To impress her because, like, I don't know what,
that's
exactly.
That's a different angle.
Well, they're all idiots, that's the point. It's like, they don't know...
Are you impressed?
Not quite.
No.
And it's also because you're very funny, but you also write in a way that your comedy, I think, is very popular with dudes as well. Like, because Lucy is hilarious, and a lot of the stuff you did for SBS was, like, very Australian-specific and, like, kind of ochre. And I think dudes kind of take umbrage at that, that you're going in on that territory.
Yeah, okay.
And, like, if they didn't know that a woman wrote it, they'd be like, that's hilarious. Mm.
Yeah.
But because you are, they're like, oh, but actually... And trying
actually,
to... I know the actually thing is a hack by now, but it is true.
Oh, it happens all the time.
Yeah,
all
the well
time.
Actually.
Mm. I mean, and I think there is so much about that whole, are people responding in good faith or not good faith? Mm. Like, I think... I mean, it happened on the way here. There was, I saw an article about Tony Owett saying that Cardinal Penn was such a fine man, right? And I retweeted that saying that, you know, trial by media is not a good idea, and I never advocate for trialing someone by media, but at the same time, let it be known that lots of fine men have been abusers, and vulnerable women slash kids often bear the brunt, right? Because that's... And that seemed like a quite straightforward thing. And a whole bunch of people were like, stop trying to take this away from the boys and bring the women into it. And like, and I'm like, whoa. And so it's like clear that no, like it, what you said, like it doesn't actually matter what I say. People are just going to find. And so in that case, do you care? Like, should I care about trying to be nuanced enough that I don't put any feet wrong? Or do we just...
There's no way of putting an end to that one, that what a battery, which is not so much abuse, but any time you talk about something, but what about men? What about boys? Mm-hmm. Not all men. That one just... That, I find, doesn't upset me, but it's intensely irritating.
Frustrating.
The example... I just talked over you like a man would. I'm sorry.
Get out.
I've become...
Don't interrupt me.
Sorry. I did apologise, though, like a lady would, so it's fine. But I was going to say, a really good example of that is talking about domestic abuse with athletes. There's, I don't know if you've heard of Hope Solo, who's a goalkeeper, and the American women's soccer goalkeeper, who's had a tumultuous relationship and got arrested for, I think, domestic something with a cousin or something like that, like very vague. And so every time you bring up the epidemic of, like, domestic abuse in men and athletes, everyone's like, what about Hope Solo? It happens with women. And I'm like, give me a break. What a stretch.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I do data all the time, and it doesn't matter how credible the data is. This is from the coroner's court. This is from you know, the criminal trials.
Numbers don't
this
lie.
Is from, yes, and... But what about that one thing I read about in the National Enquirer that said women do this all the time? What about that, huh? Have you got an answer? Have you got an answer? Oh, well, you're not answering. Well, clearly you're too scared to.
Are you triggered?
Yeah. It's so, like, time-consuming. This is the thing Lindy West talks about. This is the thing that kills me. It's, like, takes away from what we actually want to be doing and writing about. It takes up so much time just going through stuff. Just, it takes up energy to not respond. It takes, like, it's so, I don't know how you guys,
Well, it's also just trying to get stuff done. So when I was in Sydney 2 weeks ago, I did the drum, and I just said, we're talking about terrorism, and I said something about the risk doesn't match the rhetoric. And I talked for a couple of minutes and then finished it off with just a throwaway line about more people have died falling off ladders in the last year than from terrorism in the last 20 years in Australia. Oh, my God. Oh, don't say that on national TV.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But the problem was that I was in Sydney doing this really quite amazing stuff, but I couldn't get through all the yelling to find out if anybody was paying attention to the thing that I was doing that was actually important to me, because there was just so much of it. And so you can't see through this haze of shut up about ladders. I don't even know what to say about the ladders. I just, it wasn't the point.
Bunnings Warehouse. I guess it's also worth noting that, I mean, all four of you have media profiles. I mean, you work in the media in various different ways. But we know from countless studies that women generally online, a huge proportion of them, are victims of abuse online. So I'm just going to read a few just a few numbers out. So there was a study last year done by the security firm Norton, and they found that nearly half of all women report experiencing abuse or harassment online, and 76% of those under 30 had experienced some sort of abuse. One in seven had received general threats of physical violence. One in 10 under 30 had experienced revenge porn. Researchers found that women received twice as many death threats and threats of sexual violence as men, and that harassment is overwhelmingly taking place on social media, over 66% of cases. Now, I've read other studies where the numbers are actually slightly higher than that. I guess I'd like to know how each of you interact with online abusers. Maybe give me a specific example, if you want to. Do you interact with them? Do you block them?
It depends. It depends on what mood you're in
and what the nature of the abuse is.
Sometimes if they get me when I play by the Dragonista rule, so no tweeting after the third drink, but sometimes if they get me on the second drink and I haven't got anything else to do, then I'll just have a bit of fun with it. And there was one guy a couple of months ago who was trying so hard to get a reaction, and everything he said to me I was going back with, look, I understand, you're only human, but I'm really just not interested in a relationship right now. And his head was exploding with rage.
That's a good one.
I just kept going because I was sitting in a bar with a glass of wine waiting for a friend, and she was running late and I didn't have anything else to do, and I was having so much fun with it. But there are other times when, like Yasmin said, I'm busy or I'm trying to get something else done, or they're just dickheads and I can't be bothered, that I'll just block them and ignore them.
Yeah.
So it does depend a lot on what you're doing and the mood, I think.
Yeah. Sometimes I would block someone, a man, just for annoying me slightly. And sometimes I'll engage, but I don't know. It totally depends. And also it gets to a point where you're just worn down by it all. Yeah. And often if it's not even happening to me, but if I'm like, over the last few days with Claire Menitz, and I'm just like, this is not funny, and these dudes are doing it for a laugh, a lot of them, or like wanting to make noise and wanting to get a rise. And for like a lot of women who these threats and stuff are happening to, like, it's not a game. Yeah. Like, it is not funny. So it just depends like where I'm feeling, what I'm feeling. And sometimes I just send photos of my cat back scowling. And every time they respond, I just send a different one, and they just end up giving up. So
I did send somebody a photo of my dog's bottom once.
Okay. Pets have a role to play in this as human shields.
I mean, the thing that I do think about, though,
Shields. Keep going.
Oh, that's so good. Is like, I worry, like, I have no idea what it's like to be a teenager growing up on social media. Like, that terrifies me. Like, having, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter as, like, a 12, 13, 14, 15, when your view of the world and who you are is just being formed, like, it's terrifying. And what I worry about too, in my case in particular, is that the kind of stuff that's happened to me very clearly says to every young Muslim woman and every black girl in this country that if you dare step out of line, we will crush you mercilessly with the full weight of everything that we've got. And that is not okay. And like, and that's part of the reason as well that I have decided to keep talking, is because I know that I've had very strong women and that I respect in my community say, oh, I'm leaving the country. Oh, there's no way that I'm going to say anything about anything ever again. I'm, you know, like, because the evidence is there to tell them that it's that their voice is not welcome and that they will not be respected. And for people who aren't in the media and who don't have, like, public profiles, they don't expect to be hated that much. Mm. They don't expect, like, it hurts when somebody says that, you know, you should be raped by 50 people and that you should be beheaded and that all of these things hurt. And when you don't understand, or, I mean, even if you do understand that it's, you know, not even necessarily about you or it's about this, the world that we live in or whatever, it's still being directed at you. Mm. And you still have to sit with it on your phone and read it. And it's super lonely. And for, yeah, I don't know how to better support young girls. I was at a school recently and I was giving just my regular kind of talk about, like, you know, youth stuff. And some guy puts up his hand and asks me about Islam and feminism. And I give him the usual answer. They're like, you know, it's about 500 kids. This is a guy in grade 12. And then he was like, oh, I said, you know, it's got a lot to do with patriarchy. He was like, oh, patriarchy only exists in Muslim countries. I was like, sit down. And then I, like, clearly demonstrated that was wrong. And then he yells out from the crowd, and I'm talking a private school where they pay, like, half a house deposit a year, right? He yells out, do you know why? Because men are better than women.
Oh.
And I was like... Mm. I literally dropped the mic. I was like, my work here is done, right? I left the stage and then all of these girls, right, came up to me afterwards. They're like, we're so sorry. That guy abuses us all the time. That guy, this. And then I start getting all these emails from, like, 14, 15-year-old girls that are telling me about the fact that these boys gang up on them online, the fact that anything they say, they, like, and then these boys find my Instagram accounts and they find my, and I'm like, you guys, and... Imagine going to school with these kids, right? Imagine every day having to rock up and you see them online and you see them in person. I've, like, the... How we protect our young girls from that, I have no idea.
And we've talked a bit about kind of personal onus and what you do to protect yourself, but what about the role of social media companies and law enforcement in this? Jane, are they doing enough?
What, are they doing anything?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if they are, I haven't seen it.
Mm.
Very, very occasionally under a huge amount of pressure, they might begrudgingly go, oh, okay, well, we'll block that account. So you look at what we did, aren't we awesome?
Mm.
But, I mean, there's so many problems with it. The law has not caught up at all. It's light years behind. You know, you talk to the police about some of the things that come in, and I've had to go a few times. And it just you just start losing the will to live, you know, because there's this cop sitting there going, yeah, well, that's really shit, but I don't know what to do. And they don't. And they know that it's wrong and you can get some really good ones that are really supportive and really want to help, but the law's just not there yet, so there's really not much they can do. The companies themselves are going, well, we're making squillions out of this, and if we stop people abusing you and saying the sort of things they were saying to Yasmin, we're not going to make as many squillions. So, yeah, it's fine, keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, it is possible to charge someone in this country.
I don't know that it's ever actually been prosecuted successfully, has it?
Once, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong if anyone else knows of another case, but there was a case last year of a guy called Zane Alkin. Yep. I don't know how to pronounce his surname. 25-year-old was convicted, and it's under the Commonwealth Criminal Code Act of the offence of using a carriage service to menace, harass or cause offence, and it can carry a maximum sentence of 3 years imprisonment. This guy got a 12-month good behaviour bond for making obscene comments to women on Facebook, which all started... It's a very long story, but he was defending his friend who took a screen grab of a Tinder profile and put it on Facebook and made fun of this woman's Tinder profile and made fun of is a very kind way of describing what they did. The magistrate, when sentencing this man... said that he was subject to a vast overreaction and had suffered a great deal of pain, and said that the Tinder dating profile that originally started the whole thing, well, or triggered, you know, this whole exchange was of a sexual nature and inflammatory.
Poor little boy triggered into making rape threats.
Yeah. And was literally making rape threats.
He was. Well, I remember that now.
Yeah, well, alluding to rape. The magistrate didn't interpret it as rape.
So if you went up to somebody, if somebody came up to you on the street on the way home tonight and said directly to your face the sort of things that Zane was saying to the girl on Facebook, that would be assault and you could have them arrested and charged. And it would, nobody would argue with you. But because it's online, it's, you know, I've been in magistrates' courts and heard magistrates saying things like, I've heard there's a program called Twitter. I hope there's nobody in my court using Twitter. You know, and they've just got no idea. They don't even know what it is or understand it. And the number of them that will just, you know, I've talked to them and they say, well, why don't you just stop using it?
Oh, my God, yes.
And I go, because I'm a journalist and I can't do my job without it.
Ugh.
You know, it's...
But also, it's also still the systems that are full of white dudes who don't see it as a... Like, don't understand why you might be frightened by a rape threat if it's they're not standing next to you. It's because they have never felt that fear before and it's still... The system is just very slowly progressing and that, I don't know.
Well, on that conundrum.
Good times. Yeah, I mean, like, I... Like, the number of death threats that I've gotten... There's still just like not enough there. Like I was talking to some security people about it. They're like, yeah, well, you know, we can't really do anything with this. And I'm like, what it's going to take is someone rocking up to my house, putting bullets through the door, right, killing me, and then the country to have a conversation about like, oh, should we do something about... Like, it will take somebody dying. It will take somebody being like, not even just somebody. Like, we have all like... I don't know what it'll take. Maybe it'll just take a whole bunch of women in, like, being the magistrates, right?
but also the fact that it's not recognised as a very detrimental and traumatic event before it becomes a physical act. It is still a deeply traumatic thing to be subjected to, and somehow that is not recognised either.
No, it's not. And everybody experiences it in different ways, I think. I know that... That for some people it is a truly terrifying thing, and for other people it's an enraging thing, and it will make them insane with anger. But just having to even carry around that anger with you about it, that gets exhausting. That the effect can run so deep, and it's so tiring, and life is hard enough, you know, and there's so many things that demand our time and our energy as it is, without having to waste so much of it on this. I find it infuriating, but also it's a symptom. It's not the problem. What I think we're doing, all of us in our different ways, is fighting against the symptoms. And I'm so glad that Yasmin came tonight and that you're putting your voice back in the public again, because that's fighting... Yes.
Oh, thank you.
That's fighting the symptoms. And the social media bullshit is... Yasmin's fighting the cause. The social media bullshit is not the cause of this. It's an expression of it. And the causes are those ideas in society that mostly straight white men have, that anybody who's not a straight white man is not as worthy as me and shouldn't be allowed to speak.
I remember I was sitting in a cafe the other day and I looked outside and I saw a bunch of white guys walking past and I was like, man, life must be, like, great for, like, you to be able to say an idea and for people to listen to the idea and not question your everything about you and say that you, because of all these things that you are, that you can't change, you are not allowed to speak. You are not allowed to contribute to the conversation. You are, like, who you are is not okay. Like, how awesome would it be just to have people to listen to the ideas? Like, it was confounding. I was like, whoa, no wonder you're walking so tall and straight. Like, what a great life. I mean, obviously a massive simplification. Everybody's dealing with their own battles. But the fact is that we don't enter any conversation unburdened. Like, we enter every conversation carrying this baggage and having to work uphill to even get to the plateau where everybody else is. And that in of itself, like, sometimes you just look at it and you're like, do I want to? Like, do I want to have to, every single time I enter the conversation, justify my, why I should be allowed to even be part of this conversation? That's kind of, which is, you know, a reflection, I think, of the society.
Like you have to defend your very humanity before
you're and then there's also sometimes you think, like, oh, maybe it's because I'm in writing or comedy or tea, but then you talk to other women in every single field and it is literally every single field and there's no escaping it. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter if you're not in the arts, it's still, you probably walk into an office where the bosses are men. Like, it really, it truly doesn't matter. Like, there's very few places where you aren't set up, you can't go in neutral, like you're... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into the stats of it, in the most female-dominated employment categories in Australia, something like 60%, 60 to 70% of the senior management, so things like nursing, clerical administration, which is like 70% women, 60% of the senior, 60 to 70% of the senior positions are men. Yeah. I mean, we can't get ahead, quite literally.
This is getting too depressing, so I'm throwing to the audience... Please raise your hands, and if we can start with a woman, that would be really ace. If it's possible, come on, ladies, put your hands up.
Oh, come on, please.
Jane was telling me earlier that she's never, ever done one of these events where the first person who asked the question wasn't a man. So we will come back to you, sir, and we appreciate your question, but let's...
My question... is, and it, would you want to see legislation introduced at this stage, say within the next year, if we only have 25% of the police force that are women and a speckling of female representatives in the legislature and other branches of government? Like, would you want legislation to be introduced on this matter if the government infrastructure isn't there to understand why it's important?
I think yes, because one of the things that introducing legislation does is that it starts that public debate, so mm-hmm. then we start talking about having that, putting that infrastructure into place, or what infrastructure needs to be put into place. You'd have to be very careful about it, but I think the basic things like clarifying you can't make death threats or rape threats, that, or that is the same online as if you do it in person, clarifying that kind of legislation, and then let's go from there. Yes, I'd want to see it.
Also, it might influence social media, like Facebook or whatever, if you can, if they have to start getting involved in legal cases, that might speed their reactions up a bit more, I would say. Totally.
I mean, I think the public debate thing is interesting too, just because I think a lot of people don't actually know how bad it can be and is. Like, but a lot of... my partner, while I was going through all this stuff, was like shocked. He was like, I cannot believe what people are saying. Like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, this is my day to day. This was like before anything even happened. It was just like, oh, you're a person, die. And so, like, I think having like men kind of be exposed to it in some sort of way that is more obvious than it is currently to them might influence them.
Yeah. There's also New Zealand introduced the Harmful Digital Communications Act, and that makes an offence. It makes it an offence to send messages and post material online that deliberately cause emotional distress. Interesting.
That's interesting legislation. How do you
define emotional distress?
Yeah. I don't know. You can fine people up to $50,000 though.
Because I cause people emotional distress on the internet sometimes.
Sliding scale. A dangerous sliding scale.
Hi, I just wanted to let you know that there is a defamation case that has gone through about social media. It was a Sydney surgeon who was awarded about $500,000 for a patient who used social media and a website and basically had death threats against him. He was a man, but a surgeon of colour.
Awesome.
Good to know.
Well, not awesome that it happened, though. No.
I think the fact that he's a man makes all the difference. I think like being a Muslim trumps being a woman's closely second. Being of colour, like you, I think a man of colour is still in a higher position in the world than women, of like full stop. But it's good to know that it's possible.
Hey, what about the intersection between politics and business? So just thinking about, for example, Facebook, largest censor in the world, only out of 2 billion users, only removes about 66,000 hate pieces per week, and is trying to really grow community but still won't release. Moderation policies won't often work with authorities to, you know, meet regulatory requirements. What are your views on that?
Well, I think it's a business decision that Facebook is making an enormous amount of money, and they make money by letting people say and do whatever they want. I think if they started restricting the horrific things that are said to people like Yasmin, that there'd be an enormous amount of sooking about it, and they don't want that. So, particularly because they're American, and to do that properly, Facebook's so big you'd almost have to get international law onto it. So I'd say maybe my great-grandchildren might see it introduced if it's international law, if they're lucky. It's impossible to legislate, and the interest against legislating it is so strong that I really don't believe it'll happen.
Until it starts affecting people in power that are like old white men.
Yeah. So, Jane, you alluded to the fact that you reported a few different incidents and had no luck.
I had to a couple of times. It was one particular guy that was sending a lot of death threats, and I didn't take it very seriously, but I've got a friend who's a cop, and he just went, no, this is, you need to report this. This is not okay. And they did take it seriously, but they didn't know what to do. Mm. You know, they were saying, they weren't just dismissing me, but...
And nothing came
out. It was, I mean, this was a couple of years ago, but they didn't really know what to do. They didn't know how to find him. They didn't know how to take it anywhere other than to say, oh, well, let us know if anything serious happens. Mm. And I'm going, well, he threatened to kill me. I think that's pretty serious.
Yasmin, have you reported anything?
So I have What I did, so after, so the first kind of big thing that went down was Lionel Shriver's thing last year, and then Q&A this year, and then Anzac Day.
And quite the 12 months.
Mate. I thought at the beginning of this year that I didn't have enough life experience to write a second book. Maybe. I haven't been able to sift through everything because it's quite depressing. So I've got a couple of friends that have like put together a folder of all the more serious death threats. We reported them to the ABC and they were like, oh, tell the cops. But I actually haven't, because I don't know, and maybe I should, but I just don't have faith in the system.
Which is, that's a fascinating thing, because I think it's about 5% of cases that women actually take to law enforcement. Beck or Lucy, have either of you ever been?
I haven't. I think there's sort of just this sort of underlying assumption that it's not serious, and that someone saying on the internet, I'm going to kill you, is not the same as, you know, an actual threat, and it just seems kind of pointless.
And, like, Muslims don't have a great rep with cops. Like, I'm not going to lie. I don't know that the cops I'm talking to aren't people that have commented on my Facebook page. Like, I just don't have faith in Australia.
In my darker moments, though, I do think about what Yasmin was saying before about, is it going to take for one of us to be killed or seriously injured? And there are times when I look around at all the, you know, people like us, and I think, well, which one of us is it going to be? And who's going to be the test case? And... because you're right, it's going to be someone. That's
okay,
a truly terrifying
thought.
Back
to the audience again, because it's getting too dark again. So over to you
Make
guys.
Make some jokes, Beck.
Got nothing.
Yes.
I was just going to ask how much hope you have for progress and where you see it coming from, because it's hard to see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, as you can see, I'm clearly really optimistic. So I might let somebody else take Beck. Go on.
Yes, look, I think it's a really important, like, obviously I've never been under like a sustained sort of attack, but the thing that you said before where people are like, why don't you just stop using it, drives me up the wall, because also why should we have to stop using it because of other people? But I think there is, and that's why I really like Yasmin coming back to speak about this sort of thing, and and like Clem's sustained efforts to keep it the conversation going and to draw attention, like more and more people are coming on board and trying and kind of understanding what we go through. And I think the more allies we get, like that in the quietly in the backgrounds are sort of on our side and doing like defending us and that sort of thing, I think there has been a lot of progress in that. But I don't know, it just seems like pushing a boulder up a hill.
I think that's maybe the only positive, is that with social media, you know, the abuse that we get is a lot more visible. And I've had a lot of men tell me, you know, I can't believe that that's the way it is. Yeah. And it's, you know, that kind of abuse that they wouldn't have otherwise seen in real life, because, you know, it's not
documented. Yeah, that's a silver lining.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
And I think, like, that kind of hits the nail on the head. It's the progress will only come when those in power at the moment hear and see what is going on, because we have been talking about it for a long time. We've all been experiencing it for a long time. And our bleating hasn't made any difference. Like, you know, what we do is give community and support to each other. But I think the saddest thing, the thing that, and sorry, I keep talking about my last few months. but I think the saddest thing about the experience for me was the fact that, you know, I had community from women and women writers in particular, and that was awesome. But I've been working in community and with government and with organisations and with boards and been given awards left, right and centre for the last decade plus, right? Not one of those people got up in the public space and said, hey, you know what? Yasmin's actually done some real good work for Australia. We should maybe pay attention to that. I am so jaded and so cynical, and my view of Australia and the world has been so shattered by what has happened over the last 6 months that I don't think that I am optimistic at all. I have hope because I think it is important to have hope. And God damn if they're going to take that away from me too. But I am not optimistic at all. There is no evidence at all to tell me that it is, there is no evidence to show me that being optimistic would make any difference. I thought that I could outperform my identity. I thought it was, if I was so good, if I did so much good for my country, there would be a point where I'd be allowed to say things as equal. And I was proven wrong resoundingly. So no, I don't have hope. I don't have optimism for progress. But I have to believe that there is hope, and that's why I'm here.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for. But Yasmin, again, I'm really glad you changed your mind, and thank you so much for being here. So please thank Yasmin Abdel-Magid, Jane Gilmore, Lucy Valentine and Rebecca Shaw.
Thanks for listening to the Wheeler Centre podcast. Don't forget to visit wheelercentre.com for the best in books, writing and ideas from Melbourne, Australia and the world.